TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I'm flattered, but I'm not sure why you are copying my hairstyle today.
I've been trying, you know, some new things, Chris, and, I mean, it's a little embarrassing to say, but you know, you're just a fashion icon for me, Chris. I hope you don't take offense to it, but yeah, I mean, I had to try something new, and this just felt like the right way to go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to add to my name in social media, on LinkedIn, everywhere, fashion icon.
Oh,
after
you
my
should.
Name with the
you
comma.
Should. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean, well earned. So,
all right, everyone, we're going to probably talk about hair a little bit today as we continue our 30th anniversary rewatch of Deep Space Nine. This is episode 12 of season 2, The Alternate. And here's a quick rundown of the story. When the Bajoran scientist who first studied Odo arrives on the station with a potential clue to the constable's origins, their reunion is anything but warm. Despite the promising lead, Dr. Moropol's patronizing manner rekindles old resentments. And, of course, he also loves Odo. He's a father figure, but Odo doesn't always love it himself. The two, nevertheless, join a trip to a planet in the Gamma Quadrant to follow the clue, but the mysterious life form they bring back begins attacking the crew. As Odo leads the investigation into these attacks, he uncovers something he never expected. All right, Matthew, we've got a sort of a little, you know, Jekyll and Hyde thing going in this episode. We've also got a father and son relationship of sorts going here.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because this episode is so much about, you know, Odo's metamorphosis as a character. Odo in his life before the station, because he's so private, has been something that he's held very close to the chest. We don't know, obviously, a lot about where he came from before that, right? We know previously that he had been picked up as a sample and brought to a lab. And, you know, that's kind of all we had known up to this point. And so this episode helps us to kind of see and juxtapose where Odo started with where he is now. And I think in some ways it kind of reinforces just how much Odo has to grow as a character as well. One of the things that I was struck by here is that when you think about it, Odo himself is actually like a teenager, you know, maybe in his early 20s, basically, when it comes to like his experience as living life as a solid, being able to interact with beings in this way. And so he's still a very young character, even though he feels as though he's almost timeless, right? Mm-hmm. And so I found that to be such an interesting thing to be reminded about this character, is that he isn't that. He just kind of pretends to be that. And I like that this is one of those episodes where Deep Space Nine takes that time to just dig into one of its major characters, especially a character like Odo, who's malleable, mm-hmm. pun intended.
Literally.
Exactly. And but in every way. And that's what makes him so interesting as a character to be able to explore, because we can do anything we want with him. And mm-hmm. and yet they've set up enough about kind of who he is as a person to then give us this insight into where he came from, you know, how he came into being who he is right now. And it makes for a wonderful story for mm-hmm. the season. I mean, you know, coming off of what we just did with like Rivals, I mean, this is the kind of episode at this point in Deep Space Nine's history. And now that we're in season two, this is the kind of stuff that I'm wanting from this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting point about him trying to find himself. Like, appearance-wise, obviously, he looks like an adult. And as you say, even timeless in a sense. But yeah, as a person, he still doesn't know who he is. So if you think about, right. especially like a teenager trying to kind of fill out who they are and how they view things, learning how to interact with other people, to get along, to, you know, to be part of a group. And they do a good job in this story, especially talking about like the flask, for example, how he tried to communicate with yes. Mara originally by replicating a flask. And then he takes on the appearance. He has the hairstyle of Mara as well. And he's always trying to do human faces. And so there's something about him, which of course makes sense later on when we find out more about the shapeshifters and all, of trying to fit in through mirroring, which
right. yeah.
I mean, it is what you do as a person, right? You from the time you're a small child, you learn from your parents and then you learn from your friends. You
right.
you kind of mimic and you mirror. So that kind of stuff does make sense. And I think that also here, picking up and telling us a bit more about him there, if you go back to the Forsaken in season one, when he was with Lawaksana, we saw some of that vulnerability that's in him that he keeps covered up most of the time. And that's also the episode where he mentions to her that he took his hairstyle from the person who
right.
oversaw him. So there's actually a little bit of a tie-in there.
I like what you said about the idea of mirroring, because, yeah, when you think about it, that is the way in which, you know, anyone who's had a child, that's the way they learn. They're watching mm-hmm. what you do, and they do that. And so for Odo to be that type of person, in the sense of, like, any child, he's found, and he has to learn how to be able to communicate with those around him. And mm-hmm. so being able to, you know, almost literally mirror, right? And to then mimic, it does a great job of kind of reinforcing that, yeah, we don't have to worry as human beings born to other human beings about, like, you know, getting the shape right.
Right.
But all of yeah. the other stuff are the things to which, you know, everything in life has to be learned and experienced to be able to grow and move forward. And that's the process we're here on with Odo. And again, I had never really been struck, I don't think, until rewatching this episode for this rewatch here. But yeah, Odo is not an old character.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we'll learn later that they were sent out as like foundlings, basically. Mm-hmm. And so they're just left for, I mean, in the sense that he could be a certain age in that he could be like 100 years old. But as per his actual age, when it comes to interacting with other beings, yeah, he's still right. incredibly young. And yeah. because of who he is and because he's so different than everybody else, he also has this kind of set apartness about him. And so all of that, I think, is just incredibly interesting about Odo as a character. And in a lot of ways, I think Odo, even more than Data in some ways, kind of mirrors the Pinocchio story, right? He mm-hmm. wants to be a real person, but like Data and Pinocchio, he's always going to be different. For him, he is never, ever going to be able to change his being.
At least not himself.
Exactly. Not himself. Right. And yeah. So it's one of those things where rewatching this episode, I was just really struck by, again, when Deep Space Nine is kind of firing on all cylinders and we're really digging into characters, you know, in the first few seasons, that's when this show is really at its best. Mm-hmm. And so then being able to kind of see Odo's struggle with his parental figure, you know, mm-hmm. the idea that this guardian that it's been over him, you know, for lack of a better term, it's a parent, but parent and child relationships can be very complicated and mm-hmm. very difficult, especially since for them, there's always this thing that I think this elephant in the room, which is Odo is also a scientific discovery for Mora.
Yeah, right.
And so, and we even get that tension here within this episode, and I really appreciated that they did not pretend like that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, like you said about age, even if he's 1,000 years old as a founder, in terms of his life that he's living now and as we see it, he's very, very young, right? He's just learning how to live this life. So yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, the parental thing with Mora and the fact that he's a scientific discovery, initially Mora doesn't realize what he has found. He doesn't realize that Odo's sentient. So it's a bit different from being a parent where you decide to have offspring and you know that you're going to need to nurture them and raise them. You know that going in, like that's what you're doing. Whereas here it's kind of a case of like, if you have to become a parent to someone later on, you weren't planning to do so. Maybe they're not your biological children, or maybe you were estranged. You know, that's what happened to my father and me. We were kind mm-hmm. of apart for many, many years. And then we came back together when I was a young adult. And so the relationship was a bit odd because, you know, I wasn't there with him as I was growing up as a teenager and everything. So, So there are those different dynamics that can go on between parents and their children. And so, you know, I think it's a tough situation for Odo because he had to actually first make Mora aware that he was a sentient being in the first place.
Right.
And then he looked to Mora as someone who, yeah, could help him figure out how to adapt to this world that he now has to live in. But also for Mora, it's kind of difficult as well because he had to make that transition from treating Odo as simply a scientific discovery and an experiment to being a being for whom he feels some responsibility to care for and to guide.
Yeah, and I think one of the things too, they do a really good job, I think, of this in the episode, which is parents do have, right, more experience. They do have more to offer their children, and children can be difficult in the sense of not wanting to have to learn from anybody else, but wanting to do it themselves. And I think that's one of the things that we kind of see with Odo and Mora, right? Mora wants to be able to be there to help Odo, I think legitimately, mm-hmm. be able to move forward and to grow as a character. I mean, I think one of the things that's really beautiful about the episode is just the way in which Mora being on the show here in this episode allows the writers to be able to do that thing, which is to have him be able to say to Odo, oh my gosh, I can see how much you have grown. And then to be able mm-hmm. to kind of explain that and to give us again some of that kind of backstory so we get a sense of just how far Odo has come. And mm-hmm. I think that's really well done here. But it's wonderful that they don't shy away from just the kind of the toughness of their relationship, because even more so than just like an adoptive child or something. Theirs is even more difficult, like you mentioned, because of the history of Odo having to realize in and of himself, how do I communicate with something that I'm a sentient thing? While at the same time learning how to communicate in the first place, you know? And so you have this double difficulty for both of the characters in that. And therefore, the struggle for Mora to figure out how to do that led him to, you know, experimenting with this thing in a way that was frustratingly painful for Odo. And so I think, though, the beauty of it is just that the episode doesn't allow them to be estranged by the end, because Mora is able to show Odo how much he cares for him by willingly putting his life on the line for Odo. And I think, you know, again, every parent understands what it means to sacrifice for your children, even if your children don't understand it. But Odo is old enough at this point and has enough experience to realize what Mora is doing for him in this moment. And that helps bridge the divide between them to create a better, more fuller, richer relationship, which I really enjoy. And that's something that I think just connects with Deep Space Nine as a whole. This is a show about family in so many ways. I mean, Sisko at the beginning of the episode talking to his son about why he needs to study Klingon opera, you know?
Yeah.
So
that was like a subtle moment, but it did mirror what's going to be going on.
Exactly.
You know, so it was
exactly.
Nice.
Yeah. But it reminds you that this series is full of family dynamics, right? I mean, you have the Ferengi family with Quark and Rom and Nog, you know, this interesting family unit. You've got the O'Briens.
You've got the Voles that are living inside the walls.
Yes. And then you've got the characters that are single who are trying to navigate their life. I mean, you've got Dax, who's early in her life, and she, even though she has all of these lifetimes inside of her, she's still trying to figure out what her life as a young woman is going to look like. Bashir the same way. And then you've got the Kira character who's learning to let people back into her life after all that she's been through. And so all of this stuff just mirrors really well in the series. And so, yeah, it's one of those things where the fact that we're going to focus then on Odo in this relationship with this parental figure with him, it just, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you just kind of sigh. Ah, it feels right, you know, on this show.
So let me ask you this, because of what we're just talking about with Mora and Odo and how they play that like father-son dynamic, basically, in the episode. The original plan for this episode is that they were going to do like what they did on The Next Generation, where they had Brent Spiner playing Data and playing Soong, and they were going to have Renee play Odo and play Mora, so that they would more literally look the same, because Odo took his appearance from Mora. Do you think that would have strengthened the story? Do you think it would have hurt the father-son dynamic if we didn't have this obvious difference that these are two different people between Mora and Odo as we're watching the scenes?
Yeah, that is a really good question, because that's not something that I actually knew about the episode. And so, and I think it would have been really interesting if they could have pulled it off. But I would say I think that it actually works better to have a different actor, right? I think it actually does work better, because the other part of that is they'd already done that on TNG. And so I think they've already played that card, and I don't think you want to try and replicate that in the same way. And I think that it also just allows for the facial expressions of each of the characters to be genuine as they're playing off of one another. You know, the difficulty I know Brent Spiner's talked about of having to play off himself and remember what his performance was and all of that. Mm-hmm. I personally think it works better to have a different actor. And I think the actor that they chose here was a really great choice because he comes off, I think, is very caring and parental, and yet at the same mm-hmm. time, slightly eccentric and like can have that sense of like he's more worried about his science than he is maybe about this, you know, wayward child kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that works better that way. But yeah. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm the same as you. Like, I think if they had done it, it would have been a different story. I don't think the father-son dynamic would have come through properly. And I think it would have just been more of a story of, here's the Bajoran scientist that discovered Odo, and Odo mirrored his look off of here, and here's what happened to him. But yeah, I don't think it would have had the same impact. I think it is important that we have a different actor, and they do the same hair. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think because Odo can't do faces very well, I think it works just fine to suggest that he was trying to mimic more his face, but he just couldn't really mimic the face. Mm-hmm. I think it works fine that way. I guess Renee would have just been his normal face, obviously, without the prosthetics. And
right.
In a way here, I think James Sloan actually works better for this than Renee without the prosthetics would have worked.
Agreed. Yep.
For playing up the idea that he's trying to mirror Mora. Yep. Yeah, so there's that. But basically, the reason that they decided not to do it, according to the companion, is that it was going to take probably about 2 weeks to shoot the episode if they did this, because the extreme of, you know, doing the prosthetics for Odo and then having to have Renee play both parts. And they normally shot one of these episodes in 7 days. So they were looking at double the time to do this. And that was just not really logistically practical for them to do it. And so they abandoned that plan. But I think it's a good thing, because I think the episode benefits, from not having that double duty.
Yeah, I think that you really nailed it, that you just lose a real sense of familiar relationship if it's just Renee doing the role with himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you really do get this fatherly dynamic, the kind of disgruntled son dynamic that you mm-hmm. just can't get when you're, you know, basically yourself playing against yourself. And part of that mm-hmm. is just because the way it's played is that Mora does feel older than Odo as a character.
Right. And that's important.
And that's just a hard thing to pull off, I think, in the way they would want to. Again, I think, you know, Spiner does a great job with doing that in TNG, but, you know, he's the creator of them.
Yeah, I think it's easier to do Soong and Data.
I think so too. And so,
because Data is literally, like you said, created by Soong. So the fact that he would talk just like him and mannerisms would be the same and all.
Well,
it's what you would expect.
And Data himself, right, is a character who is very constrained.
Yeah.
Even more so than Odo.
Oh,
Therefore, it makes the differentiation between the character much more interesting, because mm-hmm. Soon is a completely human thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I think, again, too, it's just like, yeah, you've already done this. And I think the comparisons would actually kill the episode in the sense of like everybody would just be comparing it.
Yeah. It would have been criticized by fans, I think, if they had done that. Yep. Yeah.
Agreed.
I think so. Yeah. All right. Well, jumping towards the end, we finally find out what's really going on, which is where what's a quite slow episode overall finally picks up at the end, where we find out what's happening. They try to keep you off the scent of the trail of what's happening up until the end. And You know, they do drop in enough hints here and there to try to make you think that Dax might be responsible in some way. And they're very small hints. Even things
or the
like
the pillar that's there. I mean, there's,
yeah, the pillar. Yeah. That's the one I was going to mention. Like, even that's just very subtle. Or just like her walking up and touching the
exactly
the pillar.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's not really doing anything. But if you're just trying to figure out what might be going on, or you know, when she invites Bashir for coffee and then she leaves, you wonder, well, okay, she left by herself. Where is she going? Right.
Right.
But did you ever think that it might actually be her?
I it's hard to remember what I thought originally, but I think if you've never seen the episode, there's enough where you're just kind of like, it raises enough questions to where your immediate thought, oh, that's just Odo. And I think the reason is whatever this is seems to have enough that's possibly like another Odo.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's again, I think they're doing a good enough job to get you off the scent long enough. And mm-hmm. that's really all that they need to do. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. need to be like, oh man, I thought it was Dax the whole time. You know, it just has to be enough yeah. because again, and like you said, this is a slower episode because the episode is just more about the relational dynamics for Odo. Mm-hmm. with Dr. Mora than it is really about anything else. And yeah. at the same time, I think this reminds us that the mysteries of the Gamma Quadrant are still vast.
Yeah.
You know, there's a moment in there, I think, that Dax says, you know, there's just so much about the Gamma Quadrant we don't know. So we don't have a frame of comparison. You know, we don't have anything to put this up against because we don't have anything. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that this episode also does. It just reminds us that this series has a literal whole quadrant of the galaxy to play with that we've never played with. And one of the biggest mysteries of that galaxy is beyond what's there itself is this question of Odo that has continued to be there since the beginning of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. When Dax says we don't know much about the, or there's so much we don't know about the Gamma Quadrant, it's like, yeah, pretty much everything. We don't yeah. know. We don't know much of anything.
Don't know much about biology. Don't know much about trigonometry. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. So, but they're at the point in the series now where it makes sense to start really diving into this. They've done enough setup. They've been yeah. teasing us throughout season two, and we get another Dominion breadcrumb in this episode that we don't realize until much, well, not much later, but a little bit later, because we're going to see that pillar again coming mm-hmm. up and realize that there is this connection going on to the founders and the Dominion yeah. and everything. And then connecting that to Odo, again, they're in the early stages of doing that, but I think it's a really smart path to go down. And even though we don't know a lot about Odo leading up to this episode, we learn probably more in this episode than we've learned through the series at this point in terms of details about Odo.
Yeah, agreed.
And, you know, as a where he came from and as a person and like how he got to be where he is now and all that stuff. So, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it doesn't feel like it comes out of the blue because they've built up to it enough, to get us here so that it feels like they're finally pulling a string, as we always say, that they've had dangling yep. there for a while. I did think that the opening part with Quark was a little bit, like Odo's dialogue there was a little bit odd for the character, like that he's interested in the death rituals of various races, alien races, and everyone has to have a hobby and all. And I couldn't quite tell for sure if he's just making all that up to kind of tease Quark because he knows that Quark is, you know, selling something that's not real, or if it was meant to actually be some insight into the character, mm-hmm. maybe because the overall episode is about insight into the character.
Yeah, I took that as to be one of those things where Odo is interested in the mortality of solids, basically.
That makes
sense.
Because
sure. there is such a varied response to death in the different races. And I think for him, not even having an idea of what his lifespan is, I think that makes for an interesting question in his mind, right? Mm-hmm. And a thing to be bemused by, really. You know, just like it seems so odd to him. Like it almost is in some ways there. I get the sense that it gives you this picture of Odo's being, that there's something in him that is responding to this idea of death that maybe is almost written in his DNA to where it seems so odd.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's just a subtle hint of what you were kind of talking about earlier, where it's like, yeah, we're actually kind of giving little pointers towards what we're going to kind of do with the founders and the race of changelings here in the future.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting, but yeah, it does. It almost does kind of seem to come out of nowhere and you're like, what in the world?
Yeah. I mean, I think the mortality angle that you talk about, that makes a lot of sense for him and even for the founders later on, to wonder about solids in that way. I think the voice is just off. Like the writing doesn't feel
sure
like Odo there. Yeah. It stands out a little bit. Yeah.
It's that sense of, they're still sort of finding the voices for some of these characters. Right. And so this is one of those moments. And what I will say is that this actually does become a thing to which gets picked up on continuously about the character and his fascinations about different parts of, you know, human ideas, different species ideas. You know, we'll continue to play with this as we move forward. This is not one of those things where it just gets dropped, right? Yeah. So.
All right. Well, any final thoughts and what's your rating for the alternate?
Yeah, I like this episode. I think it's a good episode. I think it's one of those where, like you mentioned, it is kind of a slower episode, but even in a rewatch, it keeps me engaged because of the storytelling elements for Odo and the way in which we're getting the opportunity to dig into his character. And I love that stuff. You know, this is the stuff that makes Deep Space Nine so rich and deep, is that we really do plumb the depths of our characters. And so I appreciate when they do that. And the fact that we're, you know, it's mid second season and we're doing that with a character like Odo, who is just rife with storytelling possibility. Mm-hmm. It's great. So yeah, I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 noxious gases. So be careful.
Yeah. Especially, yeah, stay away from the gas for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Yeah. I don't have any other real final thoughts about this episode other than I think it's a good character episode for Odo. It's an episode that I kind of forget about until I go through another rewatch. It's not one of those that like sticks in my head over time too much. I think it would be interesting to see this episode. I think I said this about another one recently, or maybe it was on another podcast we did for a different series, but to see it done today with the visual effects that they would be able to do today.
Yeah,
because there are a few things that don't hold up in this episode. The effects for Odo when he's in his gelatinous form, you can tell those were done quickly and on a shoestring budget. And
then when he hulks out.
Yeah. That stuff could be incredible if done today, but it doesn't hold up too well. And then when they go to the Gamma Quadrant, they either literally, it's like they're walking into a painting or they're in The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, because it looks like they're digging around in some of the ruins in Hyrule Field.
Yeah.
Hoping they'll find some treasure. So that's the main thing, but I'll give this one 6 beakers. Although I'm pretty sure that there were only 5 last time I came in here.
Hey, wasn't that pillar over there earlier?
I just moved it. I thought it looked better over there.
Oh, okay.
Over here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on the alternate. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And you will see a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. Of course, you can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send a show and choose the orb, and that will come over to us by email. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is trekfm. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not stamping things with the Ferengi seal of dismemberment, where can people find you?
You know, it's not as fun as the Ferengi seal of approval, but I'll take it. You can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, outside of all the great Star Trek talk we get to do, you can find me in the 602 Club as we talk about all of those franchises we love outside of Star Trek. Over on the Nerd Party Network, a couple of shows. One is called Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, as well as aggressive negotiations as John Mills and I talk about Star Wars each and every week. And Chris, when you're not trying to figure out how to get that hairdo just perfect, where can people find you?
Yeah, I think I'm getting tips from Mara. I think that he has one suitcase he carries around with him with just bottles of hair gel, and he uses one bottle per day. Keep that in place. So really hold that in position. When I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all of the shows with you, of course. You can also find Larry Nemechek and me on The Ready Room. We recently did a recap of Strange New Worlds Season 3, and we're going to be doing a look back at Starfleet Academy Season 1 sometime soon after I'm able to watch it. I haven't seen it yet, but I have access to it now here in Japan, and I'm going to go through that soon, and so we'll be talking about that. And of course, you can find me in the back catalog across many shows over the last 15 years talking about many, many areas of Star Trek, so check that out. You can also find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky's where I'm most active, but you can find me everywhere, so please do drop me a note. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is helping us out now. Well, Matthew, I hope you're looking forward to next time and having a cup of coffee in the middle of the day as we talk about Armageddon Game.
Well, Chris, that sounds extremely exciting, but thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.